Hello, I'm Johnny Cash.
From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello. Welcome to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. I'm not Johnny Cash. I'm your host, Stuart Bulk. I'm joined by John, but not Johnny Cash. He's John Grace. What's going on there?
Hi. 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 I'm not Johnny Cash either.
Nobody's Johnny Cash. And Hunter ain't here this week. Too lazy. Too busy watching the stoner metal gigs, and like, oh man, time ran away from me this week. So we plan to name and shame him for a couple minutes. Because basically, son, you ain't got time for Johnny Cash. You was un-American in my eyes.
Hunter's gone. One more round. Hunter's gone.
Last time I shot him, I shot him in the side.
It's Columbo. We're doing Columbo for the first time.
Columbo, yeah. And it's something a show I've loved since I was a small child, thanks to my mum turning me on to this stuff. She turned me on to the good stuff. I was thinking before, just watching the tail end of this episode, of this Swan Song episode we're doing with Johnny Cash in it, that my dad turned me on to all the good shit with rock music, but mum turned me on to all the good shit with TV.
Yeah.
So I had the best of both worlds with him too. Mm-hmm. Pretty awesome. Yeah, she turned me on to Columbo, Ellery Queen, which I'm shocked to find out you just didn't know about until recently.
It was like, well, I knew about it, but I didn't know you could watch it on Hulu so easily.
And then
I found Hulu and started watching it. I was like, I really dug it. And even my son watched an episode and was really liking it because he likes the concept of detectives, even though he's not at the age where he understands the plot 100%.
Yeah. Jim Hutton's very cool.
Yeah, he is. He's really good. It's unfortunate we lost him at such a young age.
Young age, right? You really, right? What a shame. But yeah, she turned me on to that. She turned me on to Steptoe and Son as well when I was a teenager. So I thought, yeah, I'm going to be pretty lucky with mum and dad turning me on to their various things of television and rock music. But yeah, anyway, so as you said, John, we're doing a Columbo episode. Swan Song, it is from, I believe, season 3.
Yeah.
Second last episode of that series. Was it number 7 or 8? I'm sorry, I didn't do my research on it.
It was like episode 22 of the run, and a lot of people don't realize what Columbo was back then. It was a mystery movie thing where I think they only aired like one mystery movie a month of that chosen series, and it was Columbo. Because Columbo ran in a 2-hour slot.
Yeah, yeah,
it did. And, so I think you only got like one episode, and it was on rotation with other mystery shows. Like I think it was something like the NBC Sunday Night Mystery Movie or Monday Night, whenever it aired. You know, when ABC picked it up, they went, I think, revived the movie format for the late 80s when they basically revived the series after like a 15-year layoff or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know what was an NBC Saturday Night Mystery Movie?
What was that?
1978.
Why?
Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park.
Oh, God. But I first saw Columbo. I don't recall ever seeing an episode on first run. I did see it as part of the CBS late movie because they would show it every week, and it was probably the most popular show on the CBS late movie at the time. And CBS late movie, for those who are too young to remember, was before they had like David Letterman or Stephen Colbert hosting a talk show. They would basically have the hour-long shows like Hawaii Five-0 or Harry-O, and then they would have something like Columbo, and it would just run till the late hours. And it was cheap rerun programming. And on Friday nights, they would have Kolchak, the Night Stalker, or the Avengers, and And yeah. sometimes like an AIP level B movie. You know, they would show Cleopatra Jones in the Casino of Gold and odd stuff like that. Yeah, Kill and Kill Again, or, you know, it would just be the craziest stuff. The stuff CBS wouldn't dare show in primetime. So it was like blaxploitation films or kung fu films, or, well, they didn't show kung fu, but they would show American karate flicks and, you know, just anything that was a little off kilter. And Hammer movies. I understand they showed a lot of Hammer movies. I know I saw Dracula AD 72, but that's where I would sometimes see a Columbo because my grandmother loved it and she didn't care if I stayed up late. So it was, sometimes I would see it over at her house. And so I was always familiar with it. In recent years, I haven't watched much Columbo. I realize it's probably something I need to start regularly watching while I'm paying for Netflix.
Yeah, you should.
But, yeah, and because it's a really good show. But at one time, I really only watched the Patrick McGowan episodes of Columbo because he was on several times as a killer, including one episode that he was playing John Drake, secret agent / the prisoner. And it was basically him versus Columbo. And that's a great one. And I think McGowan and Peter Falk were like good friends in their personal lives. So McGowan, I think, even directed an episode that he's not even in.
Yeah,
like he was that close to the show. And Peter Falk thanked him at the Emmys when he won. He goes, "I want to thank Patty McGowan for making this season worth doing. You know, otherwise I wouldn't bother." But I noticed with this Johnny Cash episode, I'm guessing this is probably a season finale. And Johnny Cash was huge at the time in the early 70s.
Yeah. Was this around the time of the actual Johnny Cash show? Was that in the late 60s?
I believe it was. And one thing I find interesting, because now people think of Johnny Cash as a country star, but I think in the late 60s he was considered a folk guy. And his character here is really like a gospel folk singer.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's a pretty spiritual guy in real life anyway.
Yeah, he was. He was very, very religious. I think he was one of those. He was probably the first performer to talk about being born again and go on a gospel crusade. There's even a movie he and his wife produced called Gospel Road, which is them talking about their view of the Bible. And this is, of course, it's closer to a fundamentalist, evangelical, you know, almost Pentecostal version of the Bible and Christianity and all that. It's not the Catholicism or anything close to that. It's like we kind of make jokes about people believing in the Johnny Cash version of God. You know, he's a forgiving type who will raise a hand to you, that sort of thing.
I got to tell you, I have been listening to a lot of Johnny Cash lately, which is what was the impetus for me to say, "Hey guys, I really want to do this episode." And I got to say, man, Johnny Cash's San Quentin is probably the greatest live album ever.
Yeah, that is a good album.
It is stunning.
It would be in my top. I think your top five for that genre. I think my favorite live country album is the Waylon Live. That's they put out in a 2-CD set. That's pretty amazing. But the Johnny Cash one is very extremely close.
It's just intense. I mean, I've never heard a crowd like it. And I'm talking about the expanded edition that came out in 2002. Yeah. I think it was. I mean,
yeah, I have it. It's great.
It's incredible. I mean, I like Folsom Prison as well. That's a great live album. But San Quentin is just something about it. Because, I mean, especially when you hear him sing the song San Quentin that no one had ever heard before, he wrote for those guys for that show. Mm-hmm. I was reading the liner notes. And they said that when Cash sings San Quentin, "You've been living hell to me," apparently all the prisoners were just cheering for like 10 minutes. Literally 10 minutes straight. So, they had to edit down all the cheering in the song. It would have gone on forever, but that's an intense show. So wow. I've never seen a live thing that's played for Channel 4 or ITV, what it was in Britain, or the San Quentin concert. I'd love to see it. I don't even know
if that's easy to see in the States. Like, it's funny, after he died, it seems just like nobody gave a shit when he was alive. And then after he died, he was just suddenly like this legend, and all these archive releases came out and everything. But I don't even recall seeing a video or DVD of that anywhere.
I believe it's with a very big expanded box set of at San Quentin. It's like a 3 or 4 disc set, which, I want that.
It was funny because I was in Nashville the week after he passed away. And it was just like this huge controversy, and Rick Rubin was in Nashville, you know, to help try to settle the estates. It was on their local news, like it was a big deal.
Yeah, I was going to say, surely his death would have been a big deal throughout the whole country, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah. It was. You know, it's weird. It's like the Ramones are huge now. It's like they've basically got the classic rock respect that the Doors had when I was a kid. And nobody gave a shit when they were alive.
No.
And Johnny Cash, I think, had his ups and downs. And he had the contract with CBS and was making some mediocre records in the 70s to the late 70s. And really couldn't transcend his style to that urban cowboy pop country that was getting huge.
Yeah.
You know, like Eddie Rabbit or...
Or Rocky Burnett as well.
Right, right. So he was kind of stuck in a creative rut. So there was a lot of bad Johnny Cash releases at that time. And then when he was picked up by American Recordings for the Rick Rubin stuff, that was like the first time he sounded like himself for like in decades.
Man, that series of albums, those six albums are fucking stunning.
Yeah, they're flawless because that's him. Although I think the last one or two are actually a little hard to listen to because he's so obviously.
You can hear he's dying. Like he's
the health is
dying.
Not there. No. Yeah, I can't really listen to those. He just doesn't sound healthy, and I have too many memories of his voice sounding great listening to his 50s and 60s output, which is just phenomenal. And you know, doing all the Shel Silverstein songs in the 60s and the Sun Records stuff in the 50s is just stunning.
Yeah.
And you know, you take for granted how good that stuff is. And, you know, he always toured and he always put on a good live show. But, like, when I saw him in Boston in 1996, and this was after the Rick Rubin album had been out for a year, it was half filled. I mean, really? it was mostly old people there. You know, it was like he had not caught on with the young guys yet. It's like that took a couple of years. So then I think and he wasn't well. He had a cold or something. He was like, "Hey, I didn't have a cold when I was on the plane, but yeah. I seem to have one now." And of course his lesser talented son had to take over on a few numbers, and June had to do a lot of the numbers, but he had to go back and kind of rest himself, and then he'd come back out and sit down with a guitar. But amazing stage presence. He's a big dude.
That's what I was going to say. I'll get to it shortly in this film we're talking about today, but like American Recording 6, if you go back and listen to that one, that last one that was released posthumously in, I think it was 2010. I mean, if you hear that guy, like he's dying. He's got his first song is "Ain't No Grave Gonna Hold This Body Down." It's like, you know, even death can't hold down Johnny Cash. He's that fucking awesome,
right?
It's just unbelievable. I mean, those I cannot recommend enough. Those American Recording series, they are just incredible. Even that version he did of Rusty Cage, the Soundgarden track, I really like the Soundgarden one. I like Soundgarden quite a bit. But when Cash takes it and makes it his own, it's no one else can touch it.
To me, it's a Johnny Cash song now because I think the Soundgarden song, the problem is the production buries Cornell's voice. Because I've realized that's a problem I have with those Soundgarden. Like, they were a talented band, but it's just like their production buries his voice and he can sing. And I just did not understand that. And, you know, it's like, could you imagine that being done to Robert Plant in the Led Zeppelin days?
No fear. No, it wouldn't happen.
Yeah.
Not at all. But talk about Soundgarden real quick. You know, he's the one band. Let's do a bit of Soundgarden as well. That's the two bands I've listened to the most is Johnny Cash and Soundgarden. Mm-hmm. Who's the one band to your ears that Soundgarden borrowed from the most? But it's glaringly obvious.
To me they always sounded like Zeppelin wannabes, but not in the same way that Kingdom Come and later Whitesnake was.
Oh God,
Zeppelin wannabes.
No! Black Sabbath is their biggest influence. You can hear it.
You think it's Black Sabbath?
I think probably because if you take, and I talk more of the album Bad Motor Finger, and even also. Mm-hmm. Also, Super Unknown as well. You could take some of them tracks. But if you listen to Bad Motor Finger, you could take that. And if you can remove Chris Cornell's voice and put in and hear Ozzy's voice in there, that's a Black Sabbath album, that whole thing.
Yeah.
Rusty Cage, Jesus Christ Pose, Outshine, all of them are just Black Sabbath tributes. I mean, they even did a bloody Black Sabbath cover on the EP that came with it, that really rare EP of Into the Void. And if you listen to it, John, it's a dead set fucking clone for the Sabbath track. Even the way that they fine tune Ozzy's voice on that recording off Master of Reality, Soundgarden did the same thing, and they fine tuned it to sound like Ozzy. It's just fucking unreal the way they did it. But yeah, getting back to Johnny Cash, yeah, Rusty Cage was his, but also the biggest one that he did a cover of that became his basically is Hurt, the Nine Inch Nails song.
Right.
Which now Trent Reznor just goes, it's no longer mine, it's now Johnny Cash's, because basically when he does it, he's going to do it better than you, and he pretty much owns it, which is true. It was like Elvis of the day as well. Off the top of my head, I can't think of one Elvis cover, I should say, that was not as good as the original.
I know of one.
All right.
Tutti Frutti, the Little Richard song.
That's a good point. Yeah. Well, pretty hard to match.
He was out of his element with that song.
Yeah.
It's two different singing styles.
Absolutely. Do you remember that song Suspicion by Terry Stafford? Suspicion torments my heart. Suspicion.
I've probably heard it.
Everybody thinks it's Elvis, but it's not. It's Terry Stafford. I think Elvis may have done a cover of that, but
I like his Beatles covers, even though he's getting, he's starting to lose his style more than the Beatles versions. Like when he does, like Lady Madonna and stuff. I think that stuff sounds better than the Beatles because he's got more charisma. He just does. Like the voice is there,
But yeah, that's another person who I was just getting back to. Elvis was. Would take that track and, for the most part, make it his own. So Johnny Cash's stuff, I just love it a lot. And I mean, being over here, I pretty much assume everybody loves Johnny Cash in America. But I'm guessing that I'm wrong there.
It's hard to find people who hate him. In fact, I've noticed that he's the one act from the country music scene that, and this is like a cliche from like left-wing/liberal hipsters, is like, man, I can't stand country music because of all the patriotism, but the jingoism, but I do love Johnny Cash. They'll all say that. It's like, they'll act like, this is what's so funny, and Ben Weasel has brought this up on his Weasel Radio. He goes, they'll all act like Johnny Cash has this credibility, like he really did go to prison and all that stuff, which he didn't. He spent one night in jail in Starkville, Mississippi for urinating on a flower bed. But but they'll act like he's authentic and nobody else is. But this is what's so funny. He comes from the songwriting thing of creating characters. Shot a man in Reno just to watch him die, so I'm in Folsom Prison. Well, why would you be in Folsom Prison, which I think is in California, and then you've killed a guy in Nevada? Why would you be, it's like, it's all songwriting creation. He's just as much of a fictionalizer as these other songwriters that invent characters, because that's all he did. And, when he wasn't doing Shel Silverstein tunes or Kris Kristofferson songs like Sunday Morning Coming Down, which is in this Columbo episode.
Yeah, that's right.
Several times.
Yeah.
That's a masterful interpretation of the Kristofferson song, and Chris would probably agree, And the Chris version is pretty good, but Cash that's definitive Johnny Cash right there.
There's a guy who gets no respect at all, Chris Kristofferson.
And I think that was the hit. Well, it's because he made shitty records in the late 80s and 90s. Like, he started off with like four or five brilliant records in the early 70s, just fantastic stuff, and then decided he'd go political and just became annoying. And, and it's bad enough he didn't have the best singing voice.
No, I don't think he's that bad. I mean, I remember seeing, I think it might have been the Isle of Wight Festival from 1970. Chris Kristofferson was on playing on there.
Yeah.
And he got up there and played Me and Bobby McGee. And you watch the documentary.
Right.
He literally gets booed off the stage. And he just gets up and walks off.
Yeah. Well, his strength is, his strength was not in live performance. It was in songwriting.
Mm.
And I mean, he did some good records. I like his early records. But his voice is an acquired taste, because I had a stepfather who just despised him. He can't sing,
That's like Tom Waits.
He can't act and he can't sing. Like, he just did not like him.
Yeah, well, Tom Waits has got an acquired
taste. Yeah,
I'm not fond of Tom Waits' voice. It just does nothing for me. It's just like putting your balls along a fucking cheese grater.
And he gets more crackly and iron lunged later on. Dad's screaming. It's a hard thing to explain.
It is. If you listen to I Don't Want to Grow Up, which the Ramones covered, the Ramones version is fantastic. The Tom Waits one, the original, which is his, is horrible. It's just fucking unlistenable.
Right. It's totally inferior to the Ramones version. The Tom Waits songs I like are the ones that he just kind of talks his way through, like Rod Serling. and tells a story. Those are the only ones that work for me. The stuff where he's actually singing and basically screaming. Yeah. But he has a song like called What's He Building in there? It's about a neighbor that's building stuff. And it's like a Twilight Zone episode. And I was like, in 3 minutes. And I was like, you know, and I actually said, if they do a new Twilight Zone series, they need to hire Tom Waits to host it. Because he would be perfect.
That's not a bad. That's not a bad idea,
like,
you know.
He could set the mood. It's like, because to me, that's, you know,
that's a good point that you bring up. We just strained so far. But we promise we'll bring it back in a minute. If they were to do a new Twilight Zone series, okay, number one, it's going to suck because there's no creativity in the writers these days to come up with stuff. They'd just be rehashing old stories. Who could host it? Let's put Tom Waits aside. All right, they're going to say, oh, too old. Who's got enough charisma to appeal to a large audience that can pull it off? No one.
Yeah, I just can't think of a good voice that really jumps out at me as being perfect for that.
There's no Boris Karloffs around. There's no Vincent Prices.
There's no good acting in horror films. They just do Rob Zombie techniques, and they hire who's ever at the horror conventions to ham it up.
I'll tell you who'd be the only one that would do it, but I don't think he'd do it very well, would be Robert Englund.
Yeah, he wouldn't do it. He doesn't have a strong voice.
No, he doesn't. You know? He'll play on that creepy, you know.
Well, but Rod Serling had a cigarette voice, basically what killed him.
Oh, yeah.
Something I noticed when I watched Mannix, another detective show from the 60s and early 70s, is both Mannix and his secretary Peggy have like these bourbon and cigarette voices.
Lauren Bacall.
they both sound like they just smoked a pack of Reds and drank Jack Daniels.
Probably did.
Yeah, they bought it. Hollywood was different back then, but it does have that type of thing. It's like Peter Falk and his glass eye. It's just real distinctive, and you notice.
Oh yeah.
It's like that bourbon and cigarette voice. Like, nobody has that now because everybody's so healthy.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Everybody's one of those health nuts. But
that swings. Screw living a long time.
Exactly. Screw enjoying life. You mean?
Have a cool voice, for God's sake.
Yeah, God forbid, be living a diet of me like black coffee and red wine and fuck knows whatever else is bad for you. Just put my body.
But there's no Richard Burton's. You know, there's nobody with that.
No.
With that classic Shakespearean stage training where you can have a booming voice without a microphone.
I'll tell you what, Ian McKellen may get away with doing it. He might be a good choice. Sir Ian McKellen.
He's a possibility.
Or Sir Patrick Stewart might be another one.
I think Patrick Stewart would be good, except he brings the baggage of having been a Star Trek guy for so many years.
And X-Men now.
Yeah, and you kind of want to, I think they would want a host who would be uncommercial. Like they had Forrest Whitaker hosting a revival some 10 years ago, which was I don't know how he did. It didn't get very good reviews. I don't think it's an idea that would work nowadays because, you know, like you said, the writers have no creativity.
No.
They would just be modernizing Ray Bradbury stories and stuff. It's just that's all they can do because nobody's original anymore.
No, not at all. But anyway, we'll swing it back to Johnny Cash. And one more question I've got about Johnny Cash before we get into the actual meat and potatoes of this episode is who would you say was popular over the years in America? Just in America. Johnny Cash or Kenny Rogers?
Kenny Rogers in the late 70s, early 80s was more popular than Johnny Cash. Because they're both on the same label, but CBS Records was not producing Johnny Cash records that really benefited his sound. You know, they were trying to make him an urban cowboy guy, and Kenny Rogers was bigger in the late 70s for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I remember seeing that 8-track of The Gambler everywhere. So.
8-track. I'm old.
Yeah, I don't even lump Kenny Rogers in the same genre.
No. Like, but I mean,
you know,
to the casual person, oh, they're both country singers. So they'll get lumped, they'll get pigeonholed in there. It's like, oh, they're both the same, Johnny Cash, Kenny Rogers. But they're vastly different, you know, different styles altogether.
No, yeah, well, Cash transcended it, that all. I mean, he was in truth, he was a folk singer. His structure of his songs is a folk guy. Like, it's all folk singing. It's not, He's not really a country singer at
he's
all.
Actually, like, he's funny, you know, as well. Johnny Cash is quite funny.
Great sense of humor. And he also, you know, I can't remember who wrote the song, but he's definitely coined the phrase psychobilly. You know, it's like, because in the 50s, I think he was considered a rockabilly guy. It was almost like rockabilly folk.
Oh, yeah, he was. You just look at him and tell he was like a rockabilly.
Right. So. And it's just, it's that style. And, it, you know, it's a southern, it's kind of like a Tennessee southern working class thing, which he was definitely from that working class mode of Tennessee, you know.
Now, we look at songs like A Boy Named Sue. That song is hysterical. It still makes me laugh to this day.
Well, that's that was written by Shel Silverstein.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Who wrote very good jokey songs and also wrote children's books that were really popular.
Yeah. All right, let's get into it now. And like I said, the film we're going to be talking about tonight is the Columbo episode Swan Song from 1974, starring Peter Falk, obviously, as Lieutenant Columbo, Johnny Cash as Tommy Brown, Ida Lupino, Miss Ida Lupino, I should say, as Edna Brown, his wife, his very annoying wife.
Yeah.
And actor over here who is a big MMC favorite, Bill McKinney, as his brother-in-law, yes. Luke.
Yeah, who I thought was great in this in his small role.
Yeah. He wasn't given much to do, but was very good in it as well. He's always good at the stuff he does. I mean, Deliverance and also you know, the Clint Eastwood movies, the numerous Clint Eastwood movies he did in the 70s and early 80s. But you'd never seen this before, John?
No, had not seen it. I'd seen like the first few minutes of it, I think, when I was sometimes watching Columbo when A&E was rerunning it in the weekday afternoons, long before they started doing Steven Seagal Lawman and Dog the Bounty Hunter. A&E would run old detective shows in the 90s in the afternoon.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, I saw this one. Would have been the 2000s when the DVD set came out, because I own every DVD of Columbo. Like, every TV movie made, they released them all. I have them all. I
did strongly consider buying that set, that because Amazon would run those gold box specials like every Columbo for $50, you know, and it was on Netflix, so
you are cheating yourself, because they're not going to be on Netflix forever. And it's, right. I mean, for me, I'm the sort of person who, say, on a Saturday night, I like to sit down, I'll put on a Columbo film, and I'll have my bottle of red wine and, you know, a cheese platter. I'm old. God, I'm old.
And you're not going out hitting the bars?
No, I'm not trying to, you know, hang on to some sort of last shards of youth that were left me 20 years ago.
Right.
No, I'm out. I'm actually enjoying my time. And that's what I'll do. Like, I'll just pop out a Columbo movie. And my favorite one of all time is the one from season 3 called Any Old Port in a Storm. I think I mentioned it before on the show, which is with Donald Pleasence as the crazed murderous winemaker, because I love wine. I just that's a passion of mine in life.
I'll have to watch that one.
Oh, my goodness. It's just Hamathon by Donald Pleasence. He's just hamming it up every, you know, chewing the scenery up, as they say. And it's a lot of fun. It's a good episode. It's see, the thing is, what I like about the Columbos, and I meant to ask you this, I want to ask you this. What do you like seeing more? Which detective shows strike you more? The ones where the murder's been shown, like these, and then Columbo's going to work it out, or the murder's happened and you don't find out till the end?
You know, it really depends on the show. Because, like, the great thing about Columbo is it's the cat and mouse game between Columbo and the killer.
Yeah.
But on something like Ellery Queen, it's whodunit and the crazy solution that happens in the last 5 minutes, because it's always a locked room mystery, or at least the four that I've watched.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, how could this have happened? That's the phrase for it, I guess, is locked room mystery. Mm. And, you know, I like both, but I don't think I've ever seen the Columbo formula applied anywhere else successfully.
Yeah, you know? It's hard to do, because you got to have the right script, you got the right actor as well, which is paramount to the success of the show. And Peter Falk is just, they could never revive Columbo now. I mean, obviously we lost him a few years back, and they could never revive Columbo, and not successfully. It would be an absolute abomination.
No, he is Columbo. There's nothing, nobody else can play that role. That's the same way I feel about the Zatoichi Blind Swordsman series. Like, they tried to do it again with another auteurist actor, and he couldn't do it as well. And Shintaro Katsu is Zatoichi, and I think for some people, Sean Connery is James Bond, and there's no other actor in that role. But
Don Adams. And like Don Adams as Get Smart as well.
Yeah. You cannot have anybody else play Maxwell Smart because he just owns it. And Falk and Columbo, there's nobody can do that because they're just going to be compared to Falk because he's like perfect.
Yeah. He's a good actor. I mean, people seem to forget what a good actor he is. He's just Columbo. That's it. He's much more than that.
Yeah. No, he's so fantastic. And I think his career was. Sometimes his problem was he was such a great actor, but he looked like a character actor.
Yeah.
You know, with the glass eye and everything, but he was so phenomenally good that he still got movie roles and everything, and he got lead roles. But I think Columbo really broke him through because it was just it's just him doing his stuff. And when he plays cat and mouse with the actor playing the killer, you know, and what William Shatner did more than one episode, and Robert Culp, and all these kind of very dependable TV thespians, I think they love going on that show just to act with Falk and do the interplay. Like, he was, you know, probably, I mean, Robert Conrad complains that Falk was too much of a method actor, and he had to keep drinking grapefruit juice in one scene where he's playing a Jack LaLanne type of fitness guru who killed a guy. That's a great episode. And he said Falk was such a method actor, he insisted that Conrad had to drink grapefruit juice in every take, and driving him nuts, you know. But he was like, but apparently it was a blast to work with. And, you know, that was a good show off for your skill, you know, if you were a day player on TV.
Did you ever see the Columbo movie from 68, the first one, which was
I haven't seen it.
Prescription Murder.
I don't even know if that's on Netflix.
Okay, well, it is on the DVD set. Mm-hmm. Along included with all the other ones, and they, because that's from 68, and the next Columbo movie I think was 71, I think it was, or 72, something like that.
Yeah,
I think it might be 72. So there's a 4-year absence. But the way Columbo is played by Peter Falk in Prescription Murder, the 68 one, he is a bastard. Like, he's really nasty and aggressive, and they, something along the way has changed that to the quiet, annoying, persistent Columbo.
Yeah.
It's a stark contrast of character between the two characters in that Prescription Murder, and then the first one that was done, was it I forgot the name of it, but it was directed by Steven Spielberg, that first one in 72. Mm-hmm. Big difference. So I just thought I'd ask you if you'd ever.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, and I think it's based on a play. I think it was a Broadway play.
Yeah, it looks like a TV. It's a TV movie. It looks like a teleplay, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it looks like a 2-room play sort of thing. But
and I don't know if Netflix puts that in the original run. It's something I definitely need to see.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, for sure. But so anyway, Swan Song. We got Johnny Cash is Tommy Brown, a folk singer, country singer who is married to Ida Lupino, and kind of likes the young ladies. Let's say that much.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get a bit of a shock how young the girls were in this? He's having affairs with 16-year-old girls, and
it's funny because you always hear that TV was so oppressive and so censoring and stuff. It's like, no, it's like they had sleazy characters back then and sleazy villains, and Johnny Cash played a really sleazy villain. It's like, she was only 16, you know, the whole, and there's that one scene where he's putting the moves on a really young girl, and it's like,
it's really real creepy.
It's like, I think Johnny Cash relished playing a creep, and he had good camera presence because he's such a big dude, so he's like a perfect villain for Columbo.
Goodness, that was the one thing I took away from this was like, there was that one scene where Columbo's in Johnny Cash's living room and Cash is sitting down, and like Peter Falk's about maybe 5'9", I think, or 5'8". So Johnny Cash gets up from his chair. He looks like he's about 7 foot tall. Like, my goodness, this guy's a monster.
Oh, I think he was like 6'2", 6'3". That's what he looked like on stage when I saw him, and he was old and probably lost some height. He's a tall guy.
Yeah, I remember listening to a thing after he died. They were talking to a radio presenter on here. He was saying he'd met Cash a number of times. He goes, when that guy walked in the room, he goes, everybody just stopped what they were doing because his presence was just known. It was that big.
Yeah, he was the man in black. There was a reason. You know?
Yeah.
It's that's part of the persona. And I think sometimes his musical style was was kind of imprisoned by his persona. Like, it kind of dominated his singing and everything. It's like, when you hear a Johnny Cash song, you know it. You're not going to confuse him with Buck Owens or Waylon Jennings. And,
no, but
and that's that presence, you know.
But I think Johnny Cash had a lot of influence on some metal artists here for sure. If not musically, oh, yeah. His look at least.
Definitely.
Oh, well, Glenn Danzig's the obvious one.
Yeah, and when nobody dressed in all black back then. Just nobody was doing that.
No. But Johnny Cash has got a blackmailing wife who in a loveless marriage and decides to kill her one day by going to a light aircraft with himself, his wife, and the other lady, Marianne, who was, what was he, like her lover at the time or something like that, or he was a backup singer, but like a lover on the side. He's decided to kill them both and does it via poisoning them with barbiturates through a thermos of coffee, and they fall asleep in a plane. He jumps out. And a plane crashes, and from there on in, we get Peter Falk in as Columbo, and he pretty much tails Johnny Cash all the way through the course of the film. Great movie. I really enjoyed it. Yeah. What did you think of this one, John?
I was impressed. It's one of the better Columbos I've seen. I haven't seen a whole lot, but this reminded me I really need to go back and dig into the show. And what I liked was how the character of Tommy was completely based on Johnny Cash. And even at the end, he like admits to Columbo, like, I was going to pretty much admit to it anyway because the guilt was tearing me up or whatever. Yeah. And Columbo going, well, you know, I think somebody who sings this good can't be all bad or something, you know? It was just something like that. But it's like the way they played off of each other, like when he's playing the recording, he's like, you got a good ear for music, Columbo. And he goes, well, I am Italian.
I'm Italian, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, it's like
Did you get the end joke there, John, of what? Did you get the end joke of what they did on the show?
There was quite a few of them.
Okay.
Which one?
There was one where Columbo was talking to Johnny Cash, and he goes, oh, I was talking to your arranger about a soprano, your new singer, because this version's different, and someone's a soprano. He goes, yeah, that's my arranger, Nick Solacanto, right? Uh-huh. The director of this episode is Nicholas Colasanto. So they've just changed his name around. But yeah, I just thought, oh, wow. Because I'm looking at the end credits, I go, Nicholas Colasanto, didn't they mention that name in the show? And I managed to go back to that part and go, oh, they've just changed his last name around. It's pretty cool.
That's
not coincidence. That is.
Well, they had it where he was in the Air Force, and of course, Johnny Cash himself had been in the Air Force. And then they even the putting the drugs in the coffee. And then I read that that's actually how Johnny Cash used to smuggle some of his drugs.
Yeah, he had a big drug problem, didn't he? With
pills. Yeah, big time pills and all that stuff.
Never heroin and all that shit. It was always just
pills. No, they were into speed. It was like
Johnny Cash on speed. It's awesome.
Speed, barbiturates, sleeping pills, that was their thing. You know, that was the country singer drug. I mean, although cocaine got pretty big with them in the late 70s, but Johnny Cash was the first one to, like, clean up from drugs and be born again and all that. So,
yeah.
And give us the career he had. But, yeah, he had a serious drug issue in the 60s.
Who cares? He's Johnny Cash. He can do what he wants, exactly. As far as I'm concerned. He can just,
It doesn't matter. It's like there's enough good music there where I'm not going to hold that against him. I always cracked up with guys like Henry Rollins that act like drugs are the worst thing. And I'm not advocating using drugs.
No.
I am not pro-drug at all. But Henry Rollins will act like drugs are just the worst thing. But then he worships guys like Johnny Cash and John Coltrane and Jimi Hendrix, who did all their best work on drugs, and Miles Davis especially, who was like heroin
addict.
Yeah, it's like all your heroes are these junkies, but you're acting like drugs are just the worst thing possible.
Yeah.
I don't get the straight edge guys at all. It's like, I don't know if you could credit some of their vision and talent to the drugs. Maybe not, but it's like maybe their brains got put on some sort of higher level of, you know, if they were doing psychedelics or something to do some of the music they did. I don't know.
Come on, man. Why are you hating on Fugazi and Minor Threat?
Yeah, name a good Fugazi song.
I saw them live, and I was like, they all sound the same. I remember a good show, but it was full of socialist dummies, and I was like, oh, God.
Oh, yeah, the Marxist Brigade. But, well, the thing is, their music is, it's all done to like a, every Fugazi song I've heard is kind of, it's like a reggae beat kind of sped up to like a quasi-punk thing.
Mm.
And I have no idea why they have a following. I guess it's the whole Marxist stance they have on everything. I'm not sure. Yeah, we don't do music videos, bro. You know, we just eat rice and vegetarian meals.
Ice cream.
Yeah, they're very annoying. You know, for guys who looked up to Ted Nugent and Van Halen, they should be a lot more exciting.
I remember telling a girl I worked with years ago who was a staunch fucking vegetarian / vegan. She got a McDonald's thick shake one day. I said, I thought you were vegetarian and vegan. You don't have animal products. She goes, I don't. I said, what the hell do you think's in that? She goes, what? I said, it's pig fat. It's the solidifier. She threw up everywhere. She goes, this isn't pig fat. I said, I'm telling you now, that is pig fat in there. It's what they use to solidify the milk. And it's true. That's what they use. So... Know your stuff is what I'm saying, vegetarians and vegans, for fuck's sake. You know? You are eating some sort of animal product, you just don't know, or wearing it, you just don't know.
Yeah, well, they're the least healthy people I've ever encountered.
Oh, they're emaciated looking. It's
other
terrible.
Than there's morbidly obese people, and then there's the vegan vegetarian types who are just, they always look like Iggy Pop, like women that look like Iggy Pop with no fat and everything. It's just not healthy.
No, it's not. You got to have some on you, you know.
Yeah, it's in the skin looks bad. You know, women have less collagen in their face than men, so they do not age as well when they do extreme stuff like that. So it's bad.
Somebody put a meme up on, not a meme so much as a comparison picture. You know those ones, they have a picture of one person, a picture of another person up on Facebook and all that sort of shit.
Somebody, Pepe! Okay.
Yeah, Pepe. Somebody did one of a woman who was a vegan / vegetarian who looked like shit, and she was like, 51 or something. She looked way older than 51. Then they put a picture up of Nigella Lawson, the female British cook, the very popular one, who's the same age, who eats meat, drinks wine, drinks beer. And if you know Nigella Lawson, whew, man, she's a good-looking girl for her age as well. So,
yeah, I've never heard of her.
Oh, really?
Yeah, this is a reference for the international listeners.
Yeah, oh, well, I think our friend Anthony Nesbitt would know who Nigella Lawson is. She's,
I think he's in England, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And, she's a babe, let's say it much.
Uh-huh. For sure. Oh, yeah, I believe you.
Yeah, so what my point is, which is, you're thinking, why the hell are you talking about celebrity chefs? It's because, you know, veganism doesn't work. Vegetarianism, vegan, it doesn't work. You just look like shit. So, yeah. Anyway, getting back to Columbo. Oh, yeah, I noticed that angle a lot of the young girls, especially when the backyard party's happening on the day of his wife's funeral, which he's not.
I love that scene.
That's too funny. And Johnny Cash singing that Sunday morning coming down. And
as an FYI,
the girl sent to Johnny Cash is right on that beach lounge chair, whatever they call them. I don't know. I'm having a Gary Johnson a lot today. If you guys are familiar with it, yeah, this is my many Aleppo moments I'm having today. Yeah, she's singing on Cash's ride, and oh man, she's a good looker. But I noticed a lot of those girls in that scene would be about 18, 19, or posing to be 18, 19. So, which had me thinking, man, they're really not holding back on this young girl angle with Cash's character. Which is good, you know? They're just, they're really painting out to be a villain.
Well, I think that's what middle America thought of entertainers. These sleazebags just trying to get young girls.
Yeah.
You know? Like, think about how America treated the Jerry Lee Lewis marriage. Or, you know, probably even the Elvis Priscilla thing. She was pretty young when she was committed to Elvis.
Yeah, she was like 16, right? 15,
something
16?
Like that. Yeah. I think she met him when she was like 14 or something. And
oh, come on, King, so, what are you doing? That's a bit young. You know?
I mean, he was only, I think, like 20 or 21, which it wasn't as looked down upon back then as much. But, you know, the fact that she was basically, it seemed like she was almost sold to Elvis, but I don't think she like regrets. You know, if you talk to Priscilla now, as much of a Scientology whack job as she is, it's like, I don't think she regrets being married to Elvis at all.
No. She's still carrying that Presley name. There's money in them
exactly.
Presley Hills, like, you know.
Right, and it's like, and you know, I mean, she leaves Elvis for Mike Stone, but that doesn't surprise anybody either. So it's geez. Like, because he was neglectful husband, Elvis was. Hey, man, she left me for a Samoan karate man. You know, it's like.
Yeah, ooh, Priscilla, who come here, Ginger? Don't need that cow. I don't need that old bitch no more. Come here, Ginger.
The funny thing is, I'm Facebook friends with Mike Stone because he's the old school karate champ from the 60s. And,
right.
He's really nice, and every now and then he'll post. He goes, look, I have no grudge against Elvis Presley. He goes, I love his music. I'm glad I met him. And he goes, I don't bear any ill will towards him. I guess he was a judge at an Elvis Presley impersonator contest in the Philippines because he lives in the Philippines now. And he's like, he goes, no, I love his music and I still listen to it. You know, it's like, I don't, personal stuff never got in the way of my love of his music. So it's like, that's pretty cool that he wrote that.
Yeah. Speaking of the Philippines, Tuesday night on the radio, my conservative channel, I was listening. They were talking about our friend. Rodrigo Duterte. Calling me.
Really?
Yeah, they were talking about... One guy rang in. This is hysterical. I'm at work listening to that show on the conservative channel, and one guy rang in and said, oh, you know, the world would be a lot better if the leaders took action like Rodrigo Duterte. They got, oh, you know, Rodrigo's a fascist and all sorts of stuff, and he also kills off his enemies. I thought, well, you know, he probably does, but a lot of people out there need to be dealt with, let's say that much.
Well, Mike Stone loves him. He's just like, yeah, it's good to have a leader with balls. You know, I think in the West we've kind of gotten disconnected from that, the idea that our president should be like these killers or whatever. It's like we kind of run away from that idea, but I think in humanity that's a known thing.
Yep.
You know, your leader is going to be this alpha male who will shoot his enemy. It's like that's tribal almost.
That encapsulates the MMC right there. Pepe's our mascot, and Rodrigo's our enforcer.
So but it's like, I mean, well, think about it. Did the Vikings follow a guy on a ship who was a good negotiator, or did they follow the guy who was the best fighter? You know, it's like a tribal thing.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Nobody ever got anywhere with words. Action. It's all about the action.
Exactly. That's what settled every country. Yeah. You know?
But what did you think of Johnny Cash as an actor in this? I thought he was quite good.
He was really shockingly good, and I think maybe one thing that kept me from watching this for so long was I was afraid he was going to be bad in it, but he was good in this, and he was good in the TV movie I think I've mentioned a few times where he's a southern sheriff dealing with a mob boss played by Andy Griffith, and yeah. He was really good in that. And he just – I think it's kind of like Elvis. He's got a natural – gravitas that comes off great on camera and gives him automatic screen presence, and he's charismatic, and all he's got to do is deliver his line, and he was into it. You know, he loved the whole idea of playing a game of Columbo. Probably never had an acting lesson in his life.
Probably not, but I think I feel Johnny Cash is a better actor than Elvis. The only one real film Elvis gave a standout performance was King Creole.
Yeah,
he was great in that.
He's good in that. He's good in Flaming Star.
Oh,
the
boy,
Don Siegel Western. That one's actually very good.
It is. I mean, I've seen them all. As people know, I've got them all. I've seen them all. Yeah, Flaming Star was actually good. I love the song as well, Flaming Star. It's absolutely one of my favorites ever.
I mean, his other movies are basically just vehicles for his music and basically the Colonel making money. And as I've said before, summer movie usually meant an Elvis movie at the drive-in. It didn't mean a big blockbuster in the summer. The idea was kids didn't go to the movies in the summer. Mm-hmm. And they were out swimming and doing summer stuff. And Elvis movies were what they went to see if they bothered to go to the movies at all. So it's like, you know, his stuff was just meant to be vehicles for his talent. He turned down some prime roles that would have been good for his film career.
Midnight Cowboy.
Just to make the money. Star is Born, directed by Barbara Streisand.
That's right.
He was offered to him, and then it was given to Kris Kristofferson instead.
There you go. I think he turned down Midnight Cowboy for a Change of Habit with Mary Tyler Moore.
where he says the famous line, where he's like, three nuns last month were raped, two against their will.
God. No wonder he died.
Not that we're fans of rape jokes, but that
hell
one
no.
is a disastrous line that is very funny, especially hearing Elvis.
I think Elvis might have acted that film on a cup of Johnny Cash's coffee.
He probably did.
Sleepwalking his way through it.
I took some pills here. It's like,
yeah.
But yeah, it's just, yeah. You know, he turned down roles, but it was because of the Colonel was such a shitty manager. And was really, like, he was supposed to tour Australia, but apparently the thing was the Colonel had assumed a fake name or had illegally immigrated and assumed an identity and didn't. If he had crossed borders, he would have had to reveal that.
Because that's why I think they said Colonel Tom Parker always overpaid his taxes, so he'd never ever get any heat from the IRS.
Didn't want them. Look, Elvis paid something like 70, 80% in taxes or some shit. It was crazy.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a little too much, Sam.
Yeah. But I would give Johnny Cash's acting performance in this a 8, and I'd give his false teeth a 10. Him some big fake choppers he's sported on the upper lip, yeah.
That's funny, because I was looking at a clip of Arnold Schwarzenegger that was like recorded like a couple of weeks ago. He wears like the best toupee I've ever seen.
Do you think he wears one?
Yes, because he's got like a, somebody said it's a skull-fitting toupee. Like, I guess Stallone has one, too. But yeah, it just like perfectly fits the head. It doesn't lay on the head like Burt Reynolds and William Shatner's toupees back in their
Donald
prime.
Trump's.
Yeah, or Sean Connery's during his later Bond films. He's wearing a pretty bad rug. Like
Never Say Never Again is the worst.
Well, even in Diamonds Are Forever and You Only Live Twice, like the toupee is pretty sloppy. Although he was wearing a hairpiece as early as Dr. No.
You think so?
Yeah, I think that was one of the things for the role. Because if you look at him in Tarzan's Greatest Adventure, which was made like 2 or 3 years before, he's already got a widow's peak that's pretty severe. Like, he does not have a full head of hair to have a pompadour or anything. So even in Dr. No, he's wearing a hairpiece.
I think he looks better without it, to be honest, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, if you look at him Never Say Never Again and then the Untouchables, which is, what, 4 or 5 years later, it looks like two different guys, but really, he looks better without it. It just suits him.
Women went nuts for him when he was in The Untouchables.
Yeah.
It was strange in the Indiana Jones movie. And it's like, maybe for years, he was like the forgotten Bond. Like, people forget. It wasn't respectable to say that you preferred Sean Connery to Roger Moore back then.
Yeah.
Roger Moore was, movies were making so much money, you just didn't say that.
A lot worse,
you know, though. Well, yeah, well, Octopussy came out the same summer as Never Say Never Again. Guess which one made more money?
I know. I saw both in the theater as well.
I only saw Never Say Never Again in the theater because I was preferring Sean Connery's movies because they were aired on TV a lot. And I never saw Octopussy until it hit cable.
Oh, we saw Octopussy as a school excursion. Yeah.
But I would say Octopussy is a better movie than Never Say Never Again. It's just Never Say Never Again is kind of boring.
No, I mean, Octopussy's not great, but I mean, Never Say Never Again is just not great. I mean, I do want that Blu-ray as a completist only, but not at $60. I don't want it. Screw that shit. It's a bit out of my price range, people.
Octopussy is a decent like Republic serial pastiche, you know, with George MacDonald Fraser doing the screenplay, and obviously he hated Bond because he puts him in a clown suit and does all these stupid things to him.
Yeah.
So it's like a screenwriter with contempt for the character.
Did you work out at all how Columbo had figured out what Johnny Cash had done towards the end?
I had kind of figured it with my minuscule knowledge of airplanes. So it was like, I kind of figured out how he'd settle. I mean, also based on the autopsy report of the two bodies and figuring out the stuff with the seatbelt. It's not a hard thing to figure out. I mean, he always does it, but he also does a thing with almost like neuro-linguistic programming. He gets them to admit stuff that just basically leads to the solution.
There's always a formula.
And he'll say stuff like, I'm glad you said that.
Yeah, he'll say that, and he'll go, oh, it's just one more thing. He becomes really pesky and annoying. One thing I noticed as well, is the suspect will always be very open and very willing to answer any questions Columbo's got. And as time wears on, they start to become more and more agitated with him. That's one thing I've noticed through a lot of Columbo episodes. It's like that with this one. It's the same with the one with the Donald Pleasance one. It's like, Donald Pleasance, ask away, Lieutenant. You can ask me anything. Later on, he's become really infuriated with Columbo.
I'm gonna watch that this weekend.
Oh, John, like, just grab a bottle of red or grab a just sit down, grab some snacks, dude, and just watch it. It's just, oh my god, that first 5 minutes of Donald Pleasance screaming at his half brother when his half brother wants to sell off the land, the winery. Oh my god, just watch Pleasance chew everything up like a madman. It's just. I don't have the stamina today to replicate it, but it's unbelievable. You just piss yourself laughing.
No, I'm totally gonna watch that
it's
one.
It's so good.
But I know that when Patrick McGowan played like the principal of a military academy, and he had murdered somebody, and Columbo was just following around, he just got more pissed and pissed throughout the entire episode.
Yeah,
and just basically ends up admitting something, and it was almost like. Saying he saw the sun at 5:30 a.m. or something, and Columbo's like, but the sun did not come until 5:45 a.m. You know, it's something goofy like that.
Oh, yeah.
And it's almost like, good Lord, how would that hold up in court? Like, I don't even, somebody, I think it was Anthony Cumia, had made a joke. He said they should have a show called Columbo Trials where all these cases get thrown out because the evidence is all circumstantial.
You know? Doing stuff like calling the Weather Bureau and...
Right, right. It's like it's all very. It's hard to believe you'd even get a conviction on a lot of these cases. But it was funny because I thought I might get Paul Bishop's view on Columbo, you know, for a future show. So
sure, it's like, that'd be good.
It's like, come on with this. Come on, Paul, would this shit really work for a cop?
Especially with Columbo being
an
LAPD.
I think that's why most episodes. Yeah, exactly. And it's also with the cop. You know, I notice with the culprits, they're always like. They'll confess at the end, basically. Oh, you got me, you know.
Yeah. It's kind of, like a Scooby-Doo thing. Yeah, it's kind of Scooby-Doo-ish, but, I mean, it's...
Oh, yeah.
It's fun. But, I mean, even... Did you watch the ones from the 80s? Like, 80s and early 90s? The revival Columbos?
I think I've only seen about one or two.
Oh, really? They were really well written.
Yeah, are they
well.
Any good?
Oh, great. Yeah, really well written. They're not...
Really?
Okay. They're not a stain on the originals where you think, oh, God, they should never have done it. No, these are great. I really enjoyed them.
Columbo I remember from... when ABC brought it back. Yeah.
Yeah, that was 89, I think, the first set of mysteries was, and they were popular. They rated well, and they made some more. I think they made another 22 more all up.
I think so. They started off to kick off an ABC Monday Night movie. There was an ABC Monday Night mystery movie, and I think Burt Reynolds and B.L. Stryker was one of the alternating shows. And then there was Lou Gossett as... I think the writer's name is Aaron Elkins. He was like an archaeologist detective. Oh, and it's like there were these different shows that they were there. You know, there were like three or four characters that were running, and Columbo was one of them. And it was Columbo was there to kind of help bring it back.
Yeah,
it was a concept they had not done since the '70s.
Do you ever see Mrs. Columbo?
No, I don't like Kate Mulgrew at all. Never saw them. I despise Kate Mulgrew. I absolutely despise her.
Yeah. It was should never have been.
She's not a likable or charismatic actress.
Nope, not at all. It's just
I heard they were insulting.
They were. I mean, the whole running gag of Mrs. Columbo on the show of Columbo was, oh, Mrs. Columbo loves your music. Mrs. Columbo is not a fan of, bourbon or something. They should never have shown her. We don't need to see her. That's the one thing they faltered on. We didn't need to see her in her own little spin-off series. Not worth it. Like Charlie's Angels. Yeah. Did you ever see Charlie in the show?
No, I don't think they ever revealed him.
No, he was just a voice on a speakerphone or whatever it was. That's the way it should be. You don't know who the hell it is.
Right. Magnum PI, they always hid Robin Masters, right? The guy who owned the mansion that he was staying in?
Could have been. I mean, I've got the Magnum PI series, but I've only seen a few over the years. I watch them, you know, sporadically here and there. But it's just... Yeah, that was one of those things that was like, they should never have done it. I mean, I think that's why they included a couple of episodes as extras on the Columbo sec, because no one's going to buy it on its own. No one cares. So,
No. Kate Mulgrew doesn't move them.
No. All right, man. Well, anything else you want to bring up on this episode? It's pretty much a straightforward murder mystery. It's good fun to watch. I enjoy it.
I would say this is a good one to start with. I don't think you have to watch Columbo in order at all. There's no continuity.
Oh, no. That's the good thing about it. You can dive in anywhere on a Columbo movie.
This is a gateway episode for sure. It's like one of the many, you know. You can start anywhere almost.
And if you like Johnny Cash, you're really going to enjoy this one.
And if you don't like Johnny Cash, obviously there's a hole in your soul somewhere.
Yeah, Hana, you un-American traitor. Oh, I don't want to watch Johnny Cash. I want to go watch Stoner Band. I want to go and sing with a Stoner Metal singer. Oh, I know I'm supposed to watch this for the episode, but oh, I can't be bothered. That's the name of the episode, John. Hunter's un-American. You know he had to give you shit, boy, for not being here this week. Yeah, really. All right, brother. What are we going to give this out of 10?
I give it a 9.
All right. I'm going to give this as well. I'm going to give this 9 false teeth and handmade guitars out of 10.
I should change to 9 coffee mugs with barbiturates inside them. So.
9 handmade parachutes. Yeah. Oh, man. But, yeah, definitely, as we said, you know, dive into this one. If you do or don't like Johnny Cash, it's he's very easy to watch, and Peter Falk is always brilliant as Columbo.
I thought Johnny Cash did the show because he was a fan of the show. I said he must have been a fan and loved watching it.
Possibly.
And wanted to play a villain on the show.
Yeah,
I'd love to know the behind-the-scenes story of it.
I think it looked like to me they both would have got along really well on the set.
Yeah. He was having ease with it. Like, he wasn't as agitated with him. He was like, or he pretended to be happy to see him, I think, because he wanted to confess, basically.
Like when he's at the airport, he goes, "Hey, Columbo, what are you doing here?" Because he thought, okay. Cash had thought, okay, I've won this one. I'm now going to fly out to San Francisco and start the tour. And he's not going to work out that, well, I won't give away the ending because, you know. But, yeah, good episode. Really enjoyed. And I was going to say before, if you got Netflix, watch any old Port in a Storm. I'm pretty sure it's season 3. Pretty sure. But if not, it might be season 2. It's around there. But I can't recommend that one enough. And that's what I'd love to do later on down the line. You know, and maybe if we can get Paul Bishop on for that, it'd be good just to see. Because I know that episode inside out. I've seen it probably about 30 or 40 times at least. And the evidence that Columbo gets Donald Pleasance on is like, really? Okay. So, yeah, I'd like to see if that would stand up in court. Yeah. All right, mate. Anything else you want to bring up at all? No?
To people who started listening to the show because of Eron's, the last week's Eron's episode, this is the regular format of the show.
Pretty much.
We're not a true crime show.
Yeah,
just the message.
It was really hard last week, I gotta say, with no humor. I mean, obviously, the topic at hand was not humorous at all, so, but for me, it just likes to jump on board and just have some fun. I was like, man, this is hard, keeping a straight face, pretty much. But, you know, it was warranted, for sure. Couldn't make any jokes of stuff like that, yeah. As you were saying, John, this is pretty much the format of the show. So if you like it, hey, you're going to have some fun with us. And there is, if you are new to this show after the Eron's one, there is Hana, but Stoner Metal, it takes a precedence over this show.
Yay.
John.
You kind of went commie on us this week.
It's Stoner Metal. I got to watch some Stoner Metal. Sleep's coming into town, John. I got to watch them. Oh, buddy, street traffic safety cone is coming into town. Oh, I've got to go see him. Oh, I've got the whole catalog
of vinyl. All these metal bands. 160-gram vinyl, 360-gram vinyl.
2-ton vinyl needs a fucking semi-trailer to back it up into his house. The best of Waylon Jennings.
I tell you this, anytime I move.
Yeah.
Anytime I move, the worst thing to move is the vinyl records. They're the worst because you cannot hold them in a stack without them being heavy. It's like they are the worst.
Look, I kind of get the vinyl culture, but I'm sorry. And I'm sure we brought it up before in the past, either you and I or Hunter and I don't get the price tag that comes with them these days. You know, $40 for a vinyl is bullshit. Why would you? And everything's mastered for CD or iTunes. It's not mastered for analog vinyl. You're really gotten down a step in quality, if you ask
me. It's already digitally mixed.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. So, you know, it's silly.
It's
the
not
whole
like
thing is a fallacy.
It is. It's
people
not
are
like
going for. They were. I was at. Brother, I was at Vitamin Cottage the other day, and they were selling like Beatles vinyl for like $28.
Jesus. Crazy.
At a health food store. Vitamin Cottage is a health food store. And they're just making money off people, like, left and right. It's crazy.
Crazy vinyl people. Just, I don't get you. But anyway, all right, brother, let's wrap it up. We recommend this episode highly, and pretty much all the Columbo episodes as well, we recommend highly. Anyway, you can catch us at midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com if you want to send us any show suggestions, any comments you've got. Hey, you guys are good. You guys are horrible. You're a bunch of, you know, alt-right dummies or some crap like that. Just whatever you want to call us, it's up to you. iTunes reviews would be nice as well if you can leave us some of those. You can get us at Midnight Movie Cowboys on Facebook. We've got a group there, which is pretty much an interactive one. And there's also another one, which is called the Midnight Movie Cowboys Podcast, which is just where we post our shows each week. Look for both and jump on both if you want to get into the conversation. And I think that's pretty much it. Hannah may be back. Hannah will be back next week, because what we're doing next week has been, if we can get Garrow as well, the episode that everyone's been waiting for about, what, 2.5 years, John, you reckon?
2 years, at least.
Okay, 2 years. All right. So, yeah, that should give you a pretty good hint as what we're doing next week. So, if we can manage to finagle that, we'll have all of them on board, and yeah, next week should be a good one. So, on that note, I will imitate Hannah and go, dude, we're going to go with some Stoner Metal Bands and say adios.
Right. Magadog.
You can run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut him down. Tell him that God's gonna cut him down. Well, my goodness gracious, let me tell you the news. My head's been wet with the midnight dew. I've been down on bended knee, talking to the man from Galilee. He spoke to me with a voice so sweet, I thought I heard the shuffle of angels' feet. He called my name and my heart stood still when he said, John, go do my will. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut him down. Tell him that God's gonna cut him down. You can run on for a long time. Run on for a long
time. Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast. To leave feedback and show suggestions, email us at midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like our Midnight Movie Cowboys show page on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and feel free to leave us a review. Listen to us on Stitcher.com or the Stitcher Radio app. Want to help the show out? Visit MidnightMovieCowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate link. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Our personal links are on the right side of our homepage. See y'all next time.
If TV is-